This is the February 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Johnson of TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com out of Champaign County, Illinois. Jim McCormick joins us from Barrington, Illinois and AgMarket.net. And Ellen Dearden is here from AgReview in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, where you can now find at willag.org a way to register for the upcoming March 7th all-day Ag Out. Look at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have a treasure trove of folks with us on that day, including 10 of the regularly scheduled analysts you hear during the closing market report, plus Eric Snodgrass to start us out in the morning to talk about the weather. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Mark Cheney will be there from John Deere to discuss what's happening with automation and artificial intelligence. And we'll take up renewable diesel at the very end of the day with Scott Irwin, Agriculture cultural economist from the U of I, part of the Farm Doc team. He's been posting and looking at a renewable diesel as it works into the whole of the biofuel system and what it might mean for the price of soybeans going forward. And we'll also have the rest of the Farm Doc team with us to talk about ag policy and ARC and PLC decisions, crop insurance and crop budgets, as well as Bob Ray from FBFM, the farm business, farm management folks in Illinois, to talk about record keeping and how that works into your operation. The cost is just $30 for the whole day in Covington, Indiana at the Beef House, and that includes your noon meal from the Beef House and a coffee and cinnamon roll in the morning. Details online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Greg Johnson, as we talk on Thursday afternoon, I suppose it's pretty important to discuss the down day that took place that day. I think it caught a lot of folks by surprise. I don't know how much it really had to do with the Ag Outlook Forum numbers that were released, or whether it was just the weight of the market finally coming to fruition and maybe running out of buying or bullish enthusiasm. Can you tell me a little bit about that and then how the elevator system took that information and what they've done with it?
Yeah, the Ag Outlook numbers came out very early Thursday morning, and the markets really didn't respond very much one way or the other. I think corn was down 1 to 2 cents, but it was down overnight approximately that much. So really the Ag Outlook numbers really didn't have much impact. And then later in the morning, late morning, we had some ethanol stocks numbers come out and showed 15-week highs on ethanol supplies. And I think that's probably what pressured the market a little bit. It just reinforced the fact that, you know, our ethanol demand might be starting to slip a little bit, and we know our exports are behind pace. So, you know, it comes down to demand, and the demand for corn has not been as robust as the demand for soybeans has. And I think that's why the corn sold off as dramatically as it did Thursday, while the beans and the wheat hung in there fairly well. And then as far as basis is concerned, if the price stays down, futures price stays down for an extended period of time, the function of the market is to encourage farmers and elevators to move the crop to fill the pipeline. So we may see basis improve if the futures stay down, but a one-day move probably isn't long enough to impact basis. So currently basis levels are steady on corn and steady to weaker on beans, as the bean futures price has done most of the work here in the last several weeks.
So continue to talk a little bit about old crop corn for me. When you look back over the year, what were the things that you saw that made a huge difference or a big difference in this marketplace? Was it yield? Was it early in that year? We had some highs back in May of last year, for instance, for soybeans and corn too. As you think about the year, what were the important steps along the way?
Well, I think the drought in the western corn belt west of the Mississippi was probably one of the biggest stories of the year. I thought central Illinois might be included in that category for a while, but we pulled a rabbit out of our hats and somehow came up with something close to a trend line yield here in central Illinois. And of course, northern Illinois, we had no doubts that they were going to have a good crop. So Illinois had a good crop. Indiana had a decent crop. It was just the states really west of the Mississippi, Nebraska, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, primarily, although the Dakotas and Iowa and Minnesota were down a little bit as well. But some of those states like Nebraska and Kansas had double digit yield reductions. And so I think that, and then it just stayed dry. And so you had a lack of pasture. So you needed more corn to feed. And so, and farmers saw the lower yields. And so they're in pretty good financial shape. So they didn't have to sell. And so I think it was a combination of a little bit of a front loaded demand situation with the farmers not really needing to sell any more than what they had already sold up to that point. And so you had more demand than supply early on. And that's why we've had the run up, in the fall and come January, February so far, we've just kind of been steady, but we did have a pretty nice run up from October to January.
So because here in East Central Illinois, where we were kind of the target for a regional drought, are we short? And we didn't end up short crop. Are you having difficulty sourcing corn, and are end users having difficulty buying it at this time? Are farmers just holding on too long is the question.
Well, I guess we'll find out. The last 2 years, holding on too long into the summer was the right thing to do. Now, will that be the case this year? But previous years, we started at 4 and went to 5, or started at 5 and went to 6. This year, we're starting at 6 and we're already close to 7. So we're at some highly elevated levels compared to the past couple of years. So it may not pay to hold on to corn this year, but farmers remember what worked the last 2 years, and holding on to corn, as you said, corn made a high in May last year. Year, April, May, and beans made a high in June last year. So farmers remember that. And, and with the demand in beans, it has paid to hold on to beans. Corn, it really hasn't paid, but it hasn't hurt the farmer either. We're basically at about the same price. Now, after the Thursday sell-off, we're probably 15 cents below the fall price. But up until this week, the cash corn price was probably about the same. So no reward for the farmer holding it so far, but no penalty either. So it's hard to argue that the farmer has been wrong. He just hasn't been proven right yet.
Is there concern within the elevator industry about the export market as it's related to the safrinha or second crop corn that's being put in the ground right now in Brazil, and so much of it expected to be exported to China, other places, as well as them taking on the number one export market mantle from the United States?
Definitely, it's a concern. We've kind of figured out the bean export program. When South America comes online, we know that our exports go to single digits, if not zero, some weeks. So we're going to have to figure out that same supply-demand export schedule for corn. Since this is a relatively new thing, I don't think we've got it figured out, but we definitely have the bean situation figured out. Elevators and the market is telling farmers and elevators that they want the beans to move in October, November, December, January, February, prior to the South American bean crop coming online into the export pipeline. Corn, the double crop corn is 30-35% planted. It won't be ready until June, July. So, we've got a little bit of time to try to figure that out. But if the corn situation in Brazil works out the same as the beans, the market will probably try to provide some incentive for U.S. corn to move in the next 3 months prior to that big potential South American crop coming online.
And so I know South American soybean crop did not cause, well, at least I don't think it did, protein, bean meal, and oil to be exported that much more out of the country. You might need to correct me on one of the two of those. And it appears that renewable diesel, because it will create so much more meal, might cause meal to be exported out of the country. The U.S. Grains Council just today released a press release. I heard about this last week, that their expectation was that the ethanol market for export should increase. Do you think that will, any of those things will be the case for the products from both corn and or from soybean?
I think the easier one to answer is soybeans. Yes, the soybean meal price will have to get cheap enough to compete with Argentina's meal export program. We, you know, the government, you're right, the government is mandating us to crush soybeans for oil, but soybean oil accounts for 11 pounds of that 60-pound soybean. The other 48 pounds is soybean meal. So what are we going to do with 48 pounds of meal when we crush a bean for that 11 pounds of oil? So I think we do definitely need to see over time, you know, it may take a couple of years, but we'll need to get the price of soybean meal down to an equivalent level of Argentina to compete with their export meal program. So I think that's the relatively straightforward one. Corn, on the other hand, and ethanol, I guess I'm not real sure. It makes sense that, you know, maybe we will have to get the price of ethanol down enough so that we can export it. But I guess that just depends. I don't have a clear-cut answer on the ethanol, but I think soybean meal definitely will have to get cheaper over time to compete with Argentina.
And then we already have exports of DDGs as well.
Correct. Yes. And that's, I don't think that should be affected that much. I'm not real sure of that, but I think DDGs have been relatively stable up to this point.
Greg Johnson is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. On that DDG note, as we finished up the conversation with him, I decided it might be good to take up livestock feed, DDGs would count in that, with Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois. And of course, the cattle market has been pretty hot, and that's been supply-led.
Yes, yeah, supply is driving it. And of course, later this afternoon, we'll get the monthly cattle on feed numbers, which continue to show a four-year liquidation phase and pretty active marketings pulling cattle ahead. The market's anticipating bullishness, and the market has made new contract highs or nearly made new contract highs across the board this week. April cattle, which is a very active month, got up to 166.40 here on Friday and then kind of faltered a bit. Once we got above 166, we haven't been able to hold on to that. I think part of the reason for a little bit of a sell-off today is not on the supply side, but we've already dialed in some pretty bullish numbers in the U.S. Brazil did report a case of BSE in cattle in their industry, and that probably shut down exports. However, there were two Brazilian packers who announced that they were moving cattle from Brazil into Uruguay and Paraguay for killing and also then for export, particularly to Asia. Asia's been the hot market, and we certainly have seen that on the U.S. side of things as well. But I think this cattle market looks really stout, and we've got a lot of underlying support. Probably as far as all the ag commodities right now, it has the most bullish story behind it.
Anything else with the livestock, for instance, the hogs or the poultry as it relates to demand?
Well, poultry numbers are still below a year ago. I think the overall chicken flock is down about 3% from a year ago, but the layer numbers are coming up. The poultry at the grocery store is rather high priced in relation to pork. So I keep waiting for this pork market, this hog market, to rebound, but it has been looking pretty sick lately. So we've got good demand for product of meat, but where it comes from has not been the hogs recently.
Is there anything that this plays out into as it relates to the feed and residual number for corn and or bean meal?
Well, on the corn side of things, even though USDA plugged in higher feed use of corn and a higher feed use of wheat in the United States, I have a hard time really looking for those numbers to hold up as we go down each successive month. The bean meal, we are certainly seeing a lot of interest in exporting bean meal, but the U.S. is not really in a great position to export bean meal. So I think we've got a situation where we've got pretty flat demand on the livestock feeding side for both corn and meal.
Why was corn off the last 2 days in your expectation?
We've had the funds really long the corn market since the middle of December and adding to long positions. Just for instance, this nearby March corn had been hanging around this 670 to 680 range last week. Once it took out 675, then we took out 670. We broke through just about all the key moving averages, 200, 50-day, 20-day, 100-day, and I think we just hit a bunch of sell stops. The funds, which have been heavily long the corn, I think were running for the exits at the end of the week, and that's what gave us these big down moves. And funds will continue to sell into this market so long as we stay under those key moving averages and as long as we don't have a super bullish story to unveil in South America. Certainly, the Safrina corn in Brazil and the major double cropping areas of Brazil is going in a little late, but it's not anything that's a major problem.
Sometimes this means that everybody runs for the gate at the same time, in this case, long. Will the market bounce and regain what it's lost, do you suppose?
It'll regain some of it, but when you have wheat down 20, 25 cents, it's hard to see much of a rebound in the corn. So it's going to be, I think, pretty dependent on whether wheat can move higher. Wheat's down nearly a dollar from where the high that we put in on Tuesday morning.
What are some of the other things that you've been watching, outside influences that you expect or that are playing in the marketplace?
I think one of the big ones, we're at the anniversary, 1 year anniversary date of the Ukraine-Russian war. And the White House has said today that they will put additional sanctions on Russia. Now, the sanctions are not just on individuals, but also on entities and expanding the number of banks that are being sanctioned. In addition, there are some companies that are out of China that do a lot of business in Russia that are also on that list. So China has been funding a lot of the Russian war effort. And if their money gets tied up because of sanctions out of the U.S., that's going to put a pinch, I think, on the Russians, and that at least is the hope. In the meantime, Beijing has come out and said, Russia, we think that you ought to be backing off with plans for nuclear attacks. And that's kind of a new song that they're singing. But China really wants to see this Black Sea movement of grain pick up. You know, China is a big importer of corn, and it's a big importer, really just wants everything out of the Black Sea that it can take. It's been buying stuff out of Russia, but also out of Ukraine. And I think that that is a movement that they are very dependent on. So Beijing all of a sudden isn't looking to be as friendly towards Moscow as it was, say, a few weeks ago. Be interesting to see how that plays out. In the meantime, the U.S. is stuck kind of in the middle, having aligned themselves fully with the Ukraine by offering a new package of money and munitions, particularly ammunition, this week.
Speaking of money, inflation in the United States, the strength of the dollar. Any thoughts?
The dollar has just soared all week long, and that's going to be troublesome, I think, on these export side of things. The numbers that USDA came out with at their Ag Forum this week had bumped up exports of corn, wheat, and soybeans, all three of the major commodities that we watch. And it's hard to think that we'll see that kind of business if this dollar stays as strong as it is. Just the dollar index had been down around 101 30 and it's now up over 105. That's a huge move, upside move, and limits the interest of buyers of U.S. products since those are denominated in dollars.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I talked with she and Jim McCormick on Friday morning. Jim, of course, is with agmarket.net. He's in Barrington, Illinois. I asked him about the week for corn to that point and how that might play into the soybean market and for him to give me some of the details he's been watching in the chart patterns.
It does, I believe. The corn market has been kind of trending in overall in an uptrend bias since essentially the summer low in late July. But at the same time, it's kind of been capping at the top end. So you had kind of a ascending triangle. You took that uptrend line out earlier this week. You've taken out all the moving averages, and the corn market technically has just rolled over. So the technical picture is looking a little bit more sour as we speak. I think some of that has to do with trade fears of going on with China. Todd, there's a lot of people that are counting on China to come in and buy U.S. corn because that's what they traditionally do. But China, remember, is now buying some corn from the Brazilians. They've cut that new deal with the Brazilians. And now we're a little bit worried about the political aspect with China getting a little bit closer to Putin. We're threatening sanctions on China. So you got a fundamental picture that's turning a little bit soft. The technical picture turned soft or negative, plain and simple, and down the market went this week. The beans have not done that yet on the chart pattern, Todd, but if you look at it, it's the same type of bias. The bean market's been trending higher, but we've been stalling out essentially right around, like on these May contracts, right around this 1540, 1550, just shy of the 1550 level. If you start taking out those uptrend lines, that pattern looks just like the corn does, and you could see a pretty quick washout. So right now, I think this corn market looks definitely in trouble, and the bean market's not there. But like I said, if the corn is your kind of the canary in the coal mine, the beans could be up right behind it on a negative down leg.
If the Chinese are in for a purchase any time in the next 2 to 3 weeks, will this change the function? And I know this is probably what farmers are thinking about.
Well, I think it could if they come in with meaningful purchases. They can't just come in and buy a boatload here, a boatload there. They need to buy, you know, come in here and get a little bit aggressive about their buying, where essentially you're starting to see the market get excited about it. Now, we'll see. I just hate pinning my hopes on the Chinese is kind of what I've been telling my clientele. I mean, the Chinese have not our best friends. They buy from us when they need to. They're very pragmatic. They'll buy it on price. But the reality is the rest of the world, especially in beans, are going to sell them beans a lot cheaper than we are. So there is a real risk. And then on top of it, Todd, if you're a producer, you're trying to hold out and wait for those Chinese purchases potentially, or wait potentially for, let's say, a summer rally that we traditionally get as we tend to get a kind of a weather rally, is the cost of money right now. The game has changed from where we've done the last 10, 15 years. The cost of money is really a cost that producers aren't used to adding in, but it's a serious cost. If you're holding beans, Todd, and you're planning on saying, well, I'm going to hold these beans till, you know, middle of summer, another 4 or 5 months, that cost of money is going to essentially add 40 to 50 cents to your storage fees cost, even if it's on farm. So there's a huge penalty if you're wrong and the Chinese don't come in and buy it. The corn costs, Todd, roughly 4 cents a month. So if you store corn in the summer hoping Chinese will come in and buy it and corn market will rally, you're going to need the corn market to rally somewhere between 15 to 20 cents just to pay off that interest on that money that you could have paid off if you sold the corn today and maybe bought a call instead.
That's a true fundamental in the marketplace. The cost of carrying the crop forward at this point just has gotten higher than it has in the past because of inflation. What do the chart patterns look like for each crop? Start with corn for me.
Well, right now, I think the corn market, like I said, the May corn took out its trendline support. It took out its moving averages. I think you're going to find a little bit of technical support on that May corn. You're going to find a little bit of support right around the early January lows, right around 641. And then your late summer lows are right around December low, right around 636. And that's kind of where the projection is. And that essentially takes us to the low end of the trade range. I would guess we will find support in that low end of the range because the carryout is still very, very tight. There's still a lot of unknowns on that Safrina crop. We don't know what our acres are going to be next year, this upcoming year. We don't know what the yield's going to be. But, you know, the reality is you probably get another 20, 25 cent downward risk according to the chart on the corn, at least.
And for soybean?
On the beans, like I said, they have not taken out that uptrend line. But if they would start taking out specifically on the May contract at 1508, which is a 50-day moving average, which is also kind of lining up with the early February lows, right around 15, you take that out, Todd, my guess is we're going to be a quick drop down to 1472, which is a 100-day moving average. And eventually, I think you could see these beans go to the low 14s. Like I was saying earlier, the reality is if world buyers want to buy beans, they can buy them from the Brazilians for roughly a dollar cheaper than we're selling them. So I do think the sales are going to drop off like a rock. And that, you know, combined with the chart pattern turning sour, I think you could see some accelerated selling. Now, the one other thing, Todd, I want to point out that we haven't had our hands on the last couple of weeks is the CFTC reports due to not being able to get the data. Well, we're going to get those numbers here at the end of the trading week here on a Friday. And that's going to give us a better handle of what the funds have been doing for the last couple of weeks. And the risk, I think you could see, is the funds may have accumulated more longs than what the trade's thinking. And if we find out the funds are carrying this huge long position, don't be surprised if we come in next week and see some technical selling, just as people say, hey, maybe the funds overdid it to the upside, combined with the charts turning a little bit negative. So that's something we need to be aware of when we get that report out after the close on Friday.
So there are some things that are fearful in the market if you're worried about it going down. I'm wondering, when you think about the export picture to China, how much does it change ending stocks for this year for corn and soybeans, if at all?
Well, right now, it probably isn't going to take a whole lot because, for the most part, we're done shipping a lot of our product to China right now. Traditionally, we do the big load out of beans from the fall into February. We get into the latter part of February, Brazil takes up that baton, and then we start shipping corn out to the rest of the world. That's where the problem could be. If China doesn't come in and get a little bit more aggressive buying corn specifically, I think you could unfortunately see us cut the export number 50, maybe 100, 150 million when it's all said and done, if China does not come in and buy our corn. So the Chinese may be waiting to see what happens. But like I said, this is where it becomes a problem for the producer. If you're holding corn waiting to see how the safrinha crop goes, you may be holding that corn to middle summer. And by the time China doesn't buy, you've got a downward market potentially on top of this huge interest cost of holding that crop. It can vary via high penalty. So one thing we're encouraging producers to do on this old crop, get it moved. And if you want to re-own it, you can re-own it with options or maybe a futures position, even a lot less cost than holding all that cash grain in your bin.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find it online and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And there today you can register for the Tuesday, March 7th, all-day Ag Outlook. The cost is just $30. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden, Jim McCormick, and Greg Johnson. I'm Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Average temperatures this week range from the high 20s in far northern Illinois to the mid-40s in southern Illinois, between 3 and 10 degrees above normal. February to date has been 4 to 8 degrees above normal, and it will likely end as the top 20 warmest on record for most places in the state. This month followed the 6th warmest January statewide, and the mild conditions since the start of the new year has pushed spring phenology about 2 to 3 weeks earlier than normal. We have reports of tulips and other spring bulbs making their appearance as far north as Naperville this week. Although most of us are looking forward to the spring, the advanced phenology could put our tender perennials and flowering trees at a higher risk of spring damage. For perspective, the 30-year average last spring freeze is in the first week of April in southern Illinois and the third week of April in northern Illinois. The northern half of the state saw quite a bit of precipitation this week. 7-day totals range from around half an inch for most of southern Illinois to nearly 4 inches in parts of central Illinois. Storms rolled through ahead of a warm front on Wednesday, bringing a wide swath of 2 to 3 inches of rain all the way from Beardstown to Watseka. A few places in Logan and McLean County saw nearly 4 inches of rain in a single day, causing widespread ponding of water in fields and yards. At this point, we can consider soil conditions across virtually all of the state from somewhat to very wet. Meanwhile, the northern edge of the state saw a snow-rain mix with ice accumulation ranging from around a 1/10 of an inch to 3/10 of an inch. We saw reports of tree damage and some power outages in parts of Boone, McHenry, and Lake counties from the ice. One thing we didn't see from this storm was significant snowfall accumulation, continuing our season-to-date snowfall deficits. Most places north of I-64 are 10 to 15 inches below normal on snowfall. Looking ahead, our mild pattern is likely to continue at least through the first week of March. There are hints of a possible switch to colder weather in the middle of March, but for the next 7 to 10 days, our temperatures will be more spring-like. All indications point to an active storm pattern with forecasted accumulations between 1 and 2 inches inches statewide over the next 7 days. Precipitation outlooks also continue to lean wetter than normal through the middle of March, so we may not get a good chance for soils to dry out at least until the latter half of the month. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.